Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm coming to you live on Sunday night, Sunday afternoon, I guess. Here it is still in Sacramento, California. Hope you guys had a great weekend and are continuing to have a great weekend. It's Columbus Day weekend, so that does mean that some of you may be celebrating a three-day weekend. So nothing really seems kind of standard or normal anymore for obvious reasons. So I don't know how normal people's work schedules are. I don't know if three-day weekends are what they used to be. But if you are in the benefit of an extra day off from work and you find yourself in that position, I hope that you are enjoying yourself, enjoying a cold beverage or enjoying the company of your loved ones. Whatever it is, I hope that you are having a good time. So today we are going to be doing the SmackDown recap from last Friday night. Took me a bit longer than usual to get it up and get through it. Usually I try to have those recaps the very next day for you on Saturday, and I hope to continue with that expectation for you all next week. But nonetheless, we are all caught up and excited to continue things. There's no pay-per-views by any of the major companies, so that's allowed me to kind of use this weekend to catch up. If you listen to the episode prior for the NXT review, I kind of talked about a little bit of a tweak to the podcast where we're attempting to make things a little bit better, more enjoyable for you guys. So we are going to elaborate more on the show reviews and leave a little bit less time for the news and notes. I'm still going to try to do my best to get news and notes to you guys on not only this episode but future episodes. But instead of kind of divulging and sitting there and analyzing and going into great detail with speculation and whatnot, we're going to kind of just let the facts lie how they are and then use that extra time that we've gained from each episode to talk about the podcast, or excuse me, talk about the show on the podcast. So I do have almost 6 pages of notes on SmackDown tonight, so there should be plenty to talk about. I never really realized until I started doing this how analytical and how many opinions and things you can have throughout the course of a show from segment to segment. And I think that writing your thoughts down as you watch the show, whether it's on a computer or pen and paper, really actually kind of helps you retain what's happening. Throughout the course of the night, as the draft picks were coming in, I did find myself paying more attention and being more aware of who was previously drafted versus if I wasn't documenting it. I'd like to think I'd still pay attention, but I always think about things, you've heard me say this almost every single episode, from the standpoint of a real sports fan. And I don't say that to discredit wrestling in any way, because obviously I'm a huge fan, or I wouldn't make these episodes throughout the course of the week. But I always like to kind of draw comparisons to what wrestling is doing and how that would play out if wrestling were in fact a true real sport and not sports entertainment. So one of the things I was thinking of is when you watch the NFL draft or the NBA draft, you typically see a more standard format where the team is on the board. They have a little bit of time. They make a selection, and then the show will kind of cut away and do analysis, and they'll talk about things, and we'll talk about that as well. I have it in my notes, so we'll go through it. I think WWE could kind of benefit throughout the course of the night on a show on like episodic television. I don't know necessarily that the way WWE does it is interesting, at least not to me. It doesn't suck, it's not boring or anything like that, but you have them trying to tell stories throughout this night. We would see advancement with Jey Uso and his cousin. Bayley and Sasha Banks would go at it and continue that story. And then even Kevin Owens and The Fiend, everything that's going on with The Fiend and Alexa Bliss and all that stuff. So there was plenty of story to be told and other great things that happened that we will talk about as well. But I kind of wonder, and I'll divulge more about it, but you figure with the aid of things like the WWE.com website, social media, things like Facebook and TikTok and all this, they could really do almost a true draft special where instead of broadcasting the draft throughout the show, they could do an hour-long show or something. Think about when they do the pay-per-view pre-shows. That's an hour long. That streams for free on not only their website, I believe, but it's on their YouTube page, their Facebook page, and their TikTok page. I know I get announcements on all of them. I think it might even stream on Twitter. And most of what that show is, most of that is the last-ditch effort to catch you up and try to sell you on the pay-per-view. They hype you up and remind you what all the matches are, why they're happening, and what the implications are for what may happen. And then you maybe get a pre-show match or two. And it's really, really cool. And I think that they could do something like that because they could get their little table with Charlie Caruso and Booker T, Jerry the King Lawler, Christian, and these various former superstars that they bring on to analyze. And it would be interesting to see picks kind of taken. And you could have, you know, Stephanie could still do it the same as she did last year, and as we will come to find out she did on tonight's episode of SmackDown as well, where she goes out there and she does the picks. But instead of doing four rounds of just rapid fire, five picks at a time, Raw picks this guy, SmackDown picks this guy, etc., instead of kind of making it monotonous like that, I think it could be interesting if instead they would say Raw's first pick is this, and then cut to some analysis where Booker T and the guys could essentially put that pick over. They could talk about it like, oh, that's a great first pick, and here's why. This guy's a former multi-time world champion and is the current Mr. Money in the Bank, whatever their scenario is. Obviously, I'm not talking about Otis being a multiple-time world champion. I'm just using that as an example. They could say all sorts of things. And we'll get into that more because I do have it in my notes. And I think it could be interesting because if you were to put that on television, that would suck. That would completely suck. It would be boring. It would kill ratings. People would tune out and watch Hallmark movies or something else. It wouldn't work. But in the context of a special, your diehard fans could watch it and then they could always recap it quickly on Raw. I just think there's a kind of a happy medium because the draft just doesn't seem to mean anything. I've been talking about that ever since they announced it back at Clash of Champions. All the people they're going to pick on SmackDown tonight and all the people they'll pick tomorrow night on Monday Night Raw, I just feel like we're not going to see them anymore in terms of staying on their show. You'll see a guy who's supposed to be a Raw superstar and then they'll just be on SmackDown. And there's too much temptation for WWE to do that. They've always been bad about that. But now that Raw and SmackDown are literally just filmed in Orlando and no one ever leaves or goes anywhere due to the COVID restrictions, they have the entire locker room at their disposal. So if they wanted to, they could very easily, you know, bounce these guys around. And I truthfully would like to see brand exclusivity. It gives you a reason to tune in to a show you might not watch. Like, oh, I don't normally watch SmackDown because my other show I like to watch is on Friday nights, but my favorite wrestler is on there, so I'm gonna watch it. I don't know. So that's just kind of a take I have, and again, we'll go more into it. So we're gonna jump into the news and the notes that I have for today, and then we are going to talk about what we saw on Friday Night SmackDown. So the first bit is something that came through my feed today, Sunday morning. A bit of bad news. No one's passed away, thankfully, but apparently Scott Hall is in bad shape again. It seemed like he had finally turned a corner and had been sober for some time and, you know, was doing good, and DDP was helping him and all these things, but it seems like he may have fallen off the wagon again. He had done a virtual meet and greet where he would sign memorabilia for fans that had prepaid and would write in on a chat on like Facebook Live. And it's the videos out there if you want to watch it. He appears inebriated. He just appears out of it. And he is having a really hard time with spelling things, even as they're being spelled to him. He's acting as if the instructions are super challenging for him. And it's just really heartbreaking. We've seen a lot of wrestlers in the past, they'll do it. Kevin Nash is an example. He'll get on there, he'll sign a bunch of autographs, he'll do personalizations, he'll tell jokes, and carry on. He can write his signature and tell all these stories and not get distracted. But unfortunately, something was going on with Scott Hall. I'll never judge a person who suffers with addiction. So, I mean, every battle is just, it's a new day every single day. So, I mean, hopefully if he has fallen off the wagon, he can get it right and can get back on the path of sobriety again, because it's just, it's his life, you know. As fans, we can only wish the guy the best. I do think of an incident that happened a few years ago with Tiger Woods when he was going through all his turmoil, and he got pulled over and originally charged with a DUI by police, and they did come to find out that it was the medication he was on that caused him to perform the way he was. And of course, he probably shouldn't have been driving if he was that sedated and that messed up. But it made him appear to be intoxicated when he did, in fact, have no alcohol in his system. And I think that the courts ended up waiving the DUI. So hopefully, best case scenario, hopefully Scott Hall is not drinking again. Hopefully he is not under any heavy drugs. Hopefully it was medication that was prescribed to him. And maybe it was a slip up. He took a little bit too much for some reason or something like that. So we'll have to see. But yeah, I was disappointed to see that, because I was excited to hear that after many years of trouble, he had finally kind of turned a positive corner. But it did not seem to be the case, at least for now. So we'll see what happens. There's going to be a lot of action at the pay-per-view, a lot of similar matches. We would find out on SmackDown that there would be some new Hell in a Cell matches, and we'll get into those, but there's going to be three of them on the pay-per-view, and I get that that's always kind of the case, that there's two Hell in a Cell, usually one from each brand, but now they're going to have a third. They would do some things to try to mix it up, so I do give them credit for that, but I just don't know why they seem to think each brand needs to have the match. You know, like when they do Elimination Chamber, they do Raw and SmackDown has an Elimination Chamber. I think it could be the branded pay-per-view. First of all, I'm not a fan of these. I think Hell in a Cell and these things should be saved for special occasions. But if they do insist on having these Hell in a Cell, TLC, Elimination pay-per-views, then maybe only have one match like that. One Hell in a Cell match, one Elimination Chamber, because it waters it down. Arn Anderson, who is far more qualified to talk about the topic of wrestling than I am, talks about it on a recent edition of his podcast with, I was going to say the guy's name, but with his co-host. I cannot think of the guy's name right now, so we'll just brush over that. But yeah, so three Hell in a Cell matches, and we'll delve into that a little bit more. It was announced on social media that Big Swole is going to take on Sheeta for the AEW Women's Championship on the anniversary edition of AEW this Wednesday. So that means now, in addition to the three other title matches, we are going to get all four of the AEW championships on the line. And I think that's cool. That gives the show a big fight feel. It is their year anniversary, especially because they can't be in front of a big sold-out crowd. This makes it feel a little special, and hopefully they are able to fit all the title matches into a two-hour show, because they're going to have four title matches that all deserve opportunity, plus some other things that are being advertised as well. So we'll get Big Swole, we'll get Sheeta. That will be for the Women's Championship. We're going to get Jon Moxley taking on Lance Archer for the AEW Men's title. FTR puts the tag belts on the line against Best Friends. And then, of course, as we saw last Wednesday, Cody is going to defend his newly won second time TNT title against Orange Cassidy. Shifting gears back to WWE, During an interview with Chris Van Vliet, Dominic Mysterio, we've referenced this interview a few times, but the entire interview is finally up. It's about 40 minutes for people who want to watch it over on Van Vliet's YouTube page. It's also available in podcast form, so maybe after you're listening to this one, you can switch over to that one if you so desire. But he mentions that he'd like to work a match with David Benoit. Dominic mentions that. And he talks about how when they were kids, of course, before the tragedy, Ray and Chris Benoit were close, and they would sometimes have the families together. He talks about going to museums with David when the two of them were children and looking at, you know, dinosaurs and going to dinners and just really doing just normal kids stuff that we all kind of grew up doing. And it would be cool. It would be cool if those two could work a match. I'm not really too familiar with how Benoit's progression as a performer is coming along, but obviously the giant overarching stigma of his father's legacy being tarnished because of the murder-suicide is going to prevent that from ever happening in a WWE ring. And given Rey Mysterio's relationship with WWE, it seems like Dominic is likely to be a WWE lifer as well, especially if he stays on the path. And he seems like a level-headed kid, so even though he's pretty darn young, I think that he would stay in WWE for a long time. But possibly, if his contract was ever up and he wanted to wait before renegotiating, or he just wasn't in WWE for some reason, that could possibly be a match that we would see elsewhere. And it could be a good match. It could possibly be a really good match, especially if they build up a good backstory, since there's real life organic story behind it. But I would not hold my breath on that. Just a cool dream match, fantasy, do some armchair booking and see, you know, what could potentially happen with something like that. But now we're going to kind of skip the rest and we're going to jump into what I've got, which is the SmackDown recap. So we're going to go through all five of these pages and talk about the show. And, you know, if I haven't already spoiled anything for you, spoiler warning, there will be spoilers ahead. We're going to go into the details, who won the matches, what happened, who was drafted where, and all of that. So if you are late like me and you've already avoided it elsewhere on social media, I don't want to be the guy who spoils it for you. So definitely take the time to pause this and come back after you've gotten caught up and current on Friday Night SmackDown. So SmackDown this past Friday night was night one of the 2020 WWE draft. It did air, of course, live from the Thunderdome. And Michael Cole would tell us at the beginning of the show that executives from both Fox and the USA Network were working closely with WWE to ensure that they got the superstars that they wanted on their networks. And that's quick. I like when they tie up loose ends like that and explain, like, why is the draft really happening? In the past, it made sense because brands had general managers and things like that. But now with the shows not really being run by GMs, it just didn't make sense. So now, at least, especially because those are two different networks, the idea that USA, which is a NBC company, would want to go up head to head against Fox in terms of ratings and advertising dollars, it makes sense. I'm sure that they're not really allowed to carry that out too far because they can't represent those networks in that sense. But it was just a quick little explanation, and you could kind of imagine a scenario where, like, these CEO type people from the networks were like, oh, well, ratings show that we get a big bump whenever Roman Reigns is on, so we definitely want him on our show. So I liked that explanation, kind of giving some backstory and some reasoning behind the draft. So thumbs up to WWE on that one. They then showed us a graphic of 20 superstars that we were told are draft eligible. It was a little bit confusing to me because it was my understanding that no one is safe. I want to say they've even used that moniker. They talk about how teams can be broken up, and we could see new scenarios in which tag teams were broken up and championships could be shifted and things like that. So now to be told that just these random 20 superstars are the ones that are eligible for draft, and they didn't explain, like, how they landed on those 20.
It was just a mix from both the WWE and the Universal Champion to just random lesser used superstars that were shown on the graphic. But I was willing to overlook it, suspend disbelief. And so Stephanie McMahon would come out and she would be presiding over the draft, as I said before, announcing the picks for both networks, essentially, or both brands, however you want to look at it. So Raw was on the board first, I assume, because they air first in the week. So they used their number one pick to secure Drew McIntyre, and that allows Raw to keep the WWE Championship on their show. So that makes sense. Michael Cole had talked about prior to Stephanie's announcement that if champions were drafted, that championship and that superstar would go to that brand. SmackDown had pick number two, and they chose their champ, Roman Reigns. So right there, tit for tat, it made sense that you would keep, you know, your Tom Brady, your Michael Jordan, your main champion on your show. So it seemed like good booking so far. And then the third pick would be Raw Women's Champion Asuka, which again made sense. You would want to think hypothetically from a real sports perspective that you would want to keep your champions on the show that, you know, they're already on. Keep your title where it is. And so after Asuka was selected, the next pick there would be SmackDown. So that'd be pick number four. And SmackDown did not go for a champion. You'd think that they'd want to draft maybe the Intercontinental Champion or their Women's Champion. But again, this is why I think a draft special would be kind of interesting, because you could divulge the backstory and maybe say like, oh, well, there's been rumors that Raw's going to pick this person or that person, just like a real like NFL draft is. But they went ahead with Seth Rollins. So it made sense. Seth Rollins is a good pick. But now that leaves an opportunity possibly for the other brand to grab one of your champions that you've left on the board, because up until that point, they had all been champions. But Seth is a former champion. It made sense. I feel like they could have used that as an opportunity to say, oh, well, it's risky for SmackDown to leave some of its champions on the board, but it's a safe pick to steal Seth Rollins from Monday Night Raw. He's a multi-time champion, and they could have really just both put Seth Rollins over and made it feel like a big get for the network so people want to watch that show. So pick five was going to be the last round. Don't know why it wasn't even. Why they went with an odd number. But the last pick was Raw's pick, pick number five. And this was interesting. They picked the Hurt Business. So they got all four guys, which includes Bobby Lashley, who, of course, is the United States champion. So it's interesting because then that leaves both the SmackDown Women's Champion, the Intercontinental Champion, and both shows' tag team champions already up available on the board still for future selections. It makes sense that if you draft a tag team, you might get both guys. So I guess that's why they went with the fact that you could get an entire stable, you know, by picking the Hurt Business. You get four guys, and that makes sense. You would think maybe you would want as many guys and gals on your roster. So that seemed to make sense. I was invested enough. I thought that was good enough. So the first match that would actually start things off would follow soon. But before we could get to the match, we would see Seth Rollins was there, which didn't make sense. He was a Raw superstar, but he was at SmackDown for some reason, perhaps in anticipation. And he was being interviewed. He says that it's not about the name, because Kayla Braxton had mentioned that the Monday Night Messiah was now going to Friday nights. He says it's not about the name, but rather the message that he brings. He says he's sad that he won't be able to stay on Raw and watch the Mysterio family implode. And then he says that the greater good is now on Friday nights. So did a good job of kind of putting over the draft pick there by SmackDown. So the first match was a false count anywhere match between Sheamus and Big E. That challenge was thrown out last week, which I thought was going to be a Hell in a Cell match. At that pay-per-view, I thought that match would be on the card the way they were building it up, because Big E and Sheamus had previous history. Sheamus had put Big E through a windshield in the past. And Sheamus had never formally accepted Big East pick. So I guess with the draft shaking things up, they wanted to not leave anything to chance, and they wanted to air it. And it turned out to be a really great match. So they would start in the ring. It would eventually spill outside, and Big E would introduce a kendo stick into play that he wasn't able to immediately use. The Sheamus, the Irishman, was able to tie up Big E in the ropes and hit him over and over with a couple of unprotected shots to the midsection while he was stuck in those ropes. He finally did kind of fall like a heap out of the ropes onto the floor. Sheamus went for a pin on him. That was good for a two count, and then we would see Big E kick out, of course. Sheamus then crawled under the ring to grab some more weapons, and while he was under there, Big E was able to secure some duct tape and tape Sheamus's feet together. He then grabbed the kendo stick and kind of returned the favor and got a few lashings in on Sheamus as well, with the final one sending Sheamus tumbling over the barricade into the first ringside section where we would normally have our fans, but we have these little digital monitors right now. So after that, we'd go to commercial break. When we returned, we would see them in backstage. This kendo stick was still in tow. Sheamus would take Big E and slam him hard onto this metal case that was back there, little rampway looking table thing. They then moved on to catering. Sheamus took a whole crate of eggs and smashed it over the head of Big E. He then scooped him up before he had any time to breathe and kind of threw him into some road cases. And then they would tumble through the halls of the Thunderdome. Sheamus would grab a computer screen, which was interesting, but before he could use it as a weapon, Big E would take two different brooms and break them over the back of his rival. He even grabbed a trash can and smashed Sheamus with that four different times. So that would tumble the action out to the parking lot. And it was good to see them use the full space. Sometimes you get these matches and their falls count anywhere or extreme rules and you get excited and they use like one little section, maybe battle up the ramp and then back to the ring. So it was good to see them use the whole arena. There was like a COVID wash station out there and Big E grabbed some hand sanitizer and put it on, which was kind of like a little topical reference to current times. But then they got back to fighting and Sheamus had gotten his hands on a tire iron that was just out there. They were in a parking lot. And he hit Big E in the gut with it twice. He then took him up onto the hood of one of the cars. And he hit White Noise onto a windshield. So that was kind of how this all started. Was a few weeks ago when they were brawling. Sheamus had set up a trap. Big E thought the rest of New Day was there. And he went out to the parking lot to meet him. He got a bro kick. And he eventually got put through a windshield. So this was kind of an homage to that. That seemed like that was going to be the end of it. But Big E did kick out. And that would eventually allow the match to continue. So it was a really good match. I was a big fan of it. Sheamus would then take Big E and put him into the car door, and he would take the car door and slam him various times with the door, which you figure Big E had been putting through a windshield, taking some shots to the midsection with a tire iron, so he's probably in pretty bad shape. Sheamus scoops him up and he puts him in the trunk of the car. As he goes to close the trunk on him, Big E is able to kind of put his foot up and block it. He then battles back for a little bit. Sheamus goes for a bro kick. They're completely out of the trunk at this point. And Big E dodges that. And it was a really fun spot where Sheamus bro kicked the open trunk, the lid of the trunk or the top of the trunk. And that actually broke it completely off of its hinges. Probably not the most realistic thing, but it looked cool. So it was visually stimulating. Big E then took Sheamus and he powerbombed him onto a separate windshield than the one they had used before. I believe this spot obviously was intended to see the windshield break. The windshield did not break, and Sheamus, who was covered in sweat at this point, slid down the hood of the car and landed kind of hard on the concrete. And then Big E kind of picked him up again and threw him into the windshield a second time to kind of sell that spot. It did break on that occasion. After that, he left him on the top of the car. He grabbed him and he set him up for a big ending. There was a table there, the one that had the COVID wash station on it, and he was able to hit the big ending, which is worth a Google. If you haven't seen it, go check it out on YouTube. He hits the big ending and he jumps and they jump off the car and smash through the table. So it looked really good. That was good enough for a three count. I didn't make Sheamus look old because Big E was also battered, but continues on his singles push that they've been promoting ever since he kind of started on this whole thing. So after that, we would see our friend Jey Uso, the number one contender for the Universal Championship. He went out to the ring and he was going to confront his cousin, Universal Champion, of course, Mr. Roman Reigns, the Tribal Chief. And before we get to that, we see Big E. He's backstage. There was a commercial break in between, so it wasn't awkward pacing or anything like that. And Big E is attempting to be interviewed about his hellacious match that he just had. And a swagged out security guard walked up to Sheamus and walked up to Big E and kind of bumped into him. And it was revealed that that swagged out security guard was none other than a returning Kofi Kingston. Another security guard who turned out to be Xavier Woods came up. And so we seemingly had a New Day reunion, which was great. All three guys looked like they were in good health. And so the band was back together, as they say. So Kofi was questioning. He said something was missing. Xavier Woods said, well, what's missing? We got all three of us. We even got Francesca, the trombone. She was there. And Kofi says, well, it's our WWE SmackDown Tag Team Championships, of course. So they end that segment. We go back out. Jay's in there. And he has a microphone. And he asks Roman, hey, cousin, hey, champ, what's the stipulation going to be for our rematch heading into the pay-per-view? There's no immediate answer. Roman, of course, does not operate on Jay's time. He operates on his own. Jay was starting to do his little catchphrase thing about the Uso Penitentiary when Paul Heyman would appear on the Titantron and he would interrupt. He would kind of give off all the same Paul Heyman rhetoric, the reigning, defending, undisputed, universal champion, talked about how he doesn't operate on that time. So the camera would pan over. We would see Roman Reigns there with the belt, and he would go on to reveal that the two would face off in a rematch for the WWE Universal Championship in a Hell in a Cell match. But for the first time ever in the history of Hell in a Cell matches, it would be an I Quit match. So I did say at the top of the podcast, it's a little weird to have three different Hell in a Cell matches. And we know, of course, that the other one is the WWE title match, which, as far as we can tell, is a standard Hell in a Cell match. And we would find out later in the show what the third one was going to be. But I think that that will be interesting. I Quit match inside Hell in a Cell. It's a violent match. It would be a good reason for people to quit. So we'll see what they do with that. Round two of the draft would start after that. Of course, Stephanie McMahon was back out there. And before announcing any of the picks, she revealed that New Day would team up and take on Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro on tonight's show for the SmackDown Tag Team titles. So we cut over, and of course New Day would be the team of Xavier Woods and Kofi Kingston because Big E had already been in action on tonight's show and had went through a hell of a match. So Raw started with the first pick of the second round. They selected the phenomenal AJ Styles. SmackDown would answer back and use their pick to keep Sasha Banks on their show. Again, if it wasn't rapid fire picks, and I hate to keep beating a dead horse, but they could have used this as an opportunity to talk about how later on the show, Sasha Banks and Bayley were going to be facing off for the SmackDown Women's Championship. If Sasha Banks won, that would then allow SmackDown to keep the title. So that could have been kind of used to explain, oh, well, that's their safe pick. That's why they didn't pick a champion earlier when they had picked Seth Rollins. Maybe I'm overanalyzing. Maybe I had enough time to think about it. But you figured WWE had just as much time to think about it as well. I would have liked if they would have put a little bit, even if you're going to do it on the show, because I do understand the mystery is supposed to be what's the allure of watching, but just don't do them rapid fire. Like, pace them throughout the course of the show so analysts and things could be taken. But the action did not stop. Raw would take Naomi, so she's going away from SmackDown. It doesn't ultimately matter right now because the shows are all filmed in the same area, but we do know that her husband is on SmackDown. He's currently injured, but if he comes back, or when he comes back, I should say,
when they start hitting the road, it'll be interesting to see if they keep them on separate brands or not. Because you'd imagine you want to, once you're traveling around the country again, stay with your wife. But I guess they figure break it up right now while we have the opportunity, because when COVID's over, you know, who knows if we'll be able to do it again there. So SmackDown would get Bianca Belair. Of course, she's the EST of WWE. Similar scenario there. Her husband, Montez Ford, is part of the Street Profits, currently on Raw, currently undrafted, and currently one of those champions that I had mentioned who you'd think would be a big pick. Very interesting to see all of them going through there and leaving all those opportunities to select a champ. But Raw would then select a champ with their pick. They grab the Women's Tag Team Championships. Cole did explain that the women's tag titles are still eligible to be defended on all three brands, but this would allow Raw to keep both Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler. If and when they eventually lose those championships, they can stay property of Raw. So that makes sense. That's an opportunity for Raw to get two people, especially that aren't probably going to team again once they lose those championships. But we'll see if they actually keep people on the shows. So AJ Styles is then shown via video segment. He's expressing his anger and his frustration towards SmackDown. He always, you know, says SmackDown is the show that he helped build. And he says that SmackDown should have taken him number one, but ultimately he's relieved to be off of the brand because he no longer has to be around cheaters like Jeff Hardy and Sami Zayn. So good little, I guess, put a bow on it for that was a good rivalry between the three of them for the Intercontinental Championship. So down the line, that opens opportunities. AJ Styles versus Drew McIntyre for the WWE Championship. I mean, who doesn't want to see that? Depending on what happens between Orton and McIntyre at the next pay-per-view here. So the A-listers, Miz and Morrison, were shown in the ring, and they were going to be taking on the team of Jeff Hardy and Matt Riddle. So apparently, the way this match was explained is on Friday morning, Riddle had expressed on Twitter that he would love to team up with Jeff Hardy. With the draft going on, he doesn't know if the two of them are going to appear on different shows. He said that although he has no history with Jeff Hardy, he would like to team with him because Jeff was an idol of his that he grew up watching. So, good enough. Apparently, Miz and Morrison were on Twitter, and they made fun of that teaming, called it names. So, that was what led to the match. So, almost right out of the gate, they hit the signature spots. Matt Riddle got down for Poetry in Motion. Jeff ran from the corner and was able to hit on, I believe, Miz. And then when both men were outside, Jeff actually went down for the position that Matt normally does in Poetry in Motion. And Matt Riddle, not to be confused with Matt Hardy, was able to kind of do what they were calling the Broetry in Motion over the top rope. He did it onto the two guys outside. So cool little spot, even if I'm not a fan of Matt Riddle's politics. He is a hell of an athlete. So that was pretty neat to see. The celebration for those two, excuse me, I kind of jumped ahead there. So Jeff Hardy would later hit a Twist of Fate onto John Morrison, and Miz would make the save and throw Jeff out of the ring. And then that would allow Matt Riddle to sneak up behind him and hit the Bro Derek and get him for the finish, the 1-2-3. So while the two of them, Matt Riddle and Jeff Hardy, were dancing around in the ring and enjoying their victory, some familiar music hit, and it was Lars Sullivan, who I had completely forgotten about. Thought he was fired from WWE. I know he had gotten in some trouble. I had no clue that he even currently still worked for them, but he had returned. So he came out, he does what he always did. He beat some guys up, and so he fought off Matt Riddle and he beat the hell out of Jeff Hardy. He even Miz took some of the damage from Sullivan. And I thought it was pretty interesting because Miz is supposed to be in the court segment later to have him just get his little tookus whipped like that. Ultimately, I don't really have faith that WWE is going to do anything worthwhile with Lars Sullivan simply due to the fact that he had all those anxiety problems. I guess right now, if you're keeping him in Orlando like they did with NXT, it might work in the short term. But he had a bunch of problems before when they were traveling. Plus, he has those problems with his tweets that surfaced where he had used the N-word and
fans weren't really into him. But WWE always likes to have a monster at their disposal that they can kind of mess around with that's just unstoppable. So I guess he's the flavor of the week again, and we'll see. Definitely planning on seeing more of him, more beatdowns like this in the short term, but don't really know what to expect from him long term. Well, one thing that was interesting is during that segment, John Morrison didn't take any damage. So Miz got beat up, and then the team of Matt Riddle and Jeff Hardy got torn up. So I was curious to see if they would kind of tie that up later, maybe with the court thing, talk about how, you know, Morrison was okay. And I don't know. There's so many angles they could go with that. But that would kind of finish that. So after that, round three of the draft was ready to go. And Stephanie had mentioned that now that Lars is back in WWE, she was trying to act as if she didn't know, and it was a surprise to her as well. She said that he will be added to the 20 randomly selected wrestlers who will be a part of the pool on Monday Night Raw for the second round, or second night of the draft, rather. So kind of throws him back into the fray. So Raw got the first pick, as usual, and they decided to keep Ricochet. So Ricochet would stay on Monday nights. SmackDown would use their pick to go with Jey Uso and keep him on SmackDown. Again, they could have used this opportunity to talk about how if Jey Uso wins the I Quit Hell in a Cell match at the pay-per-view, becomes Universal Champion, they would have, you know, the champ on their show. It could be a security because they had already selected Roman Reigns earlier. Now they were double dipping. That wouldn't allow Jey Uso to possibly win and be selected by Raw and effectively steal the title. So Raw kept their new toy, which was Mandy Rose, who they recently acquired. So they were going to keep her over there. And then SmackDown was able to double dip and keep both Rey Mysterio and his son. So although they're not formally a tag team, I guess they're sort of a stable because they're family. So this allows them to keep those guys on their show, which is cool. I'd like to see those guys team up and tag team a bit in the future as well. I think that could be really interesting. So after SmackDown doubled down, Raw decided that they wanted to do the same with their own double down pick, and they actually drafted Miz and John Morrison over to Raw, which took me. It wasn't a big, crazy shakeup deal, but it did surprise me. And so I speculated that this could perhaps be the end of the Miz and Otis storyline. Thought maybe they would wrap it up with the little court thing later tonight, and that could kind of see Miz go on. But there is the possibility, because Mandy Rose is on Raw, that she could have some thoughts. Miz had, of course, got her traded originally to get her away, as he says, so Otis could focus. So it could be interesting to see if they continue that over. I could really see it going either way, where they drop it and they just move on to new things. But it's interesting that these shows are picking these tag champs when, in fact, these tag teams, and there's both the Raw and SmackDown tag champs are both in play. That would kind of continue to be a head scratcher for me. So back into the action, we would see the women's title match. SmackDown women's title would be on the line. So Sasha Banks came out, and then Bayley came out with her favorite little steel chair. And that match would begin. It started off, Sasha Banks was full of anger, of course. So she had a whole flurry of offense because she was upset about everything Bayley's done to double cross her and whatnot. So Bayley originally was like, screw this, I'll just get counted out, lose the match, retain my championship. Sasha says, I know you're a coward, because Sasha's words, not mine. She'd been calling her a coward leading up to this match. So she goes out there, she brings her back in, and she tries to hit the Banks statement, which is, of course, her little crippler crossface submission move that she does. But Bayley was able to battle out of that, so no luck for a submission attempt there. There would be a quick roll-up attempt, and that would result in a short count and a kick out. And then Bayley was able to finally shift momentum in her favor, and so she hits a big clothesline. Her title's on the line. Of course, she's got to have some desperation. So later, Banks would hit the Banks statement. She would lock it in.
Bailey would struggle. Bailey would eventually get to the ropes, and she was on the outside. Banks was recovering. Bailey would hit her from outside with a forearm shot, and then would grab the steel chair and would ram it into the gut, right in the plain view of the referee. So she did get what she wanted. She got disqualified, so that allowed her to retain her championship despite losing the match, which is a cheap finish, but it makes sense. I like it. I actually do like the cowardly stuff. I can't even lie. To be funny, I've done that on video games against friends a few times just to piss them off. So definitely okay with that. And I didn't imagine that this match would come to culmination when it was announced. I thought that we would see something happen so it could build towards the pay-per-view. And that does appear to be what they did. So Bailey had her chair, hit her, got her DQ'd, and then Bailey was then attacked by Sasha Banks. Sasha Banks used the same steel chair, was able to hit Bailey three separate times. Mm-hmm. She put her neck in the chair, and she even tried to return the favor. That's the same move that Bailey had done to her. It's worth noting, as of right now, Sunday, Bailey is a 365-day consecutive champion. This was not the case on Friday, but now here we are on Sunday, so it has been a full year as champion for her. But Bailey does escape and avoids any further damage. We then see our boy, Mr. Kevin Owens. He's backstage, taping up his wrist, getting ready for his fight with the Fiend, and Alexa Bliss approaches him, and she only says, "Let him in." That cuts to a break. We come back from the break, and fresh out of the break is the tag team title match. So first out were the champions, Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro. And of course, we already addressed it. Kofi Kingston and Woods were going to be the team representing the New Day. So they came out and were ready to do their thing. Big E was not there at ringside with them. And we were reminded about how Kofi originally got injured back in July. So they cut back and they showed the tables match where Cesaro and Shinsuke injured him when they powerbombed him from the turnbuckle outside through two tables, and also took the championships, I believe, off of New Day. At that time, Xavier Woods was already out with his Achilles injury, and the champs were the team of Kofi and Mr. Big E himself. So the match would get going. We would see a double team move fairly early by New Day that would result in a two count. We thought that was going to get the victory and crown some new champions, but that was not the case. Later on, after a sustained beat down to Kofi Kingston, he was able to tag in Xavier Woods, who comes in off of a hot tag, and he just takes it to the champions. Eventually, he would go for a splash in the corner. He would miss, and this would give the champs the momentum once again. In an interesting spot, Kofi, who was on the outside apron, grabbed Cesaro and actually hip-tossed him to the ground all the way outside the ring, and then hit him with a DDT. There was a double team move attempted by the champions. Xavier Woods was able to block that. That let Kofi Kingston hit a Trouble in Paradise onto Cesaro. And then Shinsuke did try to battle back on his own, but he eventually was hit with a Trouble in Paradise of his own. Woods dove across the length of practically the entire ring, which was really awesome, and hit an elbow drop onto the superstar, Shinsuke. And he was able to get the three count. 1, 2, 3, brand new champions. And that would be the seventh time that the New Day were the SmackDown Tag Team Champions. So Big E came on out and decided that he was going to celebrate with his boys. And we were then going to see the last round of the draft for at least night one. Of course, it'll be continued over on Raw tomorrow night, Monday night. We'll have the podcast for that for you guys on Tuesday, and we'll talk about what all the picks were selected over there. So Stephanie kind of comes out and she congratulates the new champions, and the first pick by Monday Night Raw would see Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods get selected to Raw. And because they were the tag team champions, which I can't imagine Raw knew, so I guess it was a gamble. I don't know how Raw knew they were coming back because they weren't advertised for the show.
And there's also got to be no way that Raw knew they were going to be the champs. But we're going to suspend disbelief because now the tag team champions are over on Monday Night Raw with the tag team championships. And I assume if someone's not drafted, they don't shift shows. So as of this point in the WWE universe where things stand, Street Profits are already over there. So I don't know if we're going to see a title unification. Possibly the Street Profits will be drafted to SmackDown on Monday. That's just speculation. That's not a spoiler. We'll have to see kind of how that's going to play out. And it was almost a giveaway at this point, because Xavier Woods kept saying, "You didn't say E's name, say E2, say E2." Of course she wouldn't. The next pick would turn out to be for SmackDown, and Big E was decided to be drafted and kept over on the Blue Brand. So this allows Big E to continue his singles push, but it separates the trio. It doesn't break up the New Day, because the New Day is, of course, any combination of the three. So with Woods and Kofi still together, especially as champs, that does effectively keep them together. Raw would pick Dana Brooke, so that keeps together the team of her and Mandy Rose, which I like. It's new. I want to see where they can go with that. And then Otis was drafted to stay on SmackDown. And going back to something earlier I said about The Miz, when he and Morrison were drafted, each pick, they would show a bio. So for Otis, it said Mr. Money in the Bank. But interestingly, it said that he is dating Raw superstar Mandy Rose. So I thought that that kind of segment of the story was possibly done with her being on the other show. But since they seem to go out of their way to mention it, and now she's over there, and she's over there as a direct result of Miz and not necessarily the draft, although she was quote-unquote drafted and selected to stay, we could perhaps maybe still see that carried out over there, because you have to remember Otis is Mr. Money in the Bank. I don't believe that his contract is exclusive to SmackDown in any way. There were superstars in that Money in the Bank ladder match last summer from both brands. So hypothetically, you would think he should be able to go over and maybe challenge Drew McIntyre, maybe Randy Orton if he wins. They're going to go through a hell of a fucking match at Hell in a Cell. And so he might be able to kind of pick up the scraps and get a championship. Again, not a spoiler, just some ideas. We throw them all out and discuss everything. So Raw was next, and they opted to keep their superstar, the Spanish sexy little Angel Garza. So he stayed over there. So at this point, we're all done for night one of the draft. We know that night two is going to continue on Monday. And at this point in the board, I've been putting a lot of emphasis on the champs. It makes sense that you would want champions. So the Raw Tag Team Champions are still undrafted. The SmackDown's Women Champion, Bayley, is still undrafted. And the Intercontinental Champion, Sami Zayn, has not been drafted yet either. Bayley is probably a mute point. She's a hell of a talent, so from a real sports perspective, you would think one of the shows would want her. But regardless of how it plays out, well, actually, I take all of that back, because Sasha was drafted to SmackDown. So if Bayley is able to compete at Hell in a Cell and retain her championship, which we'll talk about more, kind of inadvertent spoiler right there, then if she's drafted on Monday to Raw, then possibly the Raw Women's Championship and the SmackDown's Women's title could be on the same show. So I don't know if that's a possible spoiler. Maybe Bayley will get drafted over there, and maybe Sasha will win the championship. Who knows? We'll have to wait and see. Pay-per-view is not till the 25th, so we got some time. And then Halloween Havoc, unrelated, is right around the corner on, the 28th. So that'll be a busy couple of days. So backstage, we see Otis. He's got a little fancy shirt on, ready for court. And we see him practicing. He's using big words that you would use in court. Tucker, of course, is helping him. And a lawyer comes in, and she gives Otis a filing, which he's not able to decipher. And so Tucker, being the good little friend that he is, or big brother, he explains that it's a continuation. So Miz is continuing to prolong the trial, so there will be no court case. So no idea on when it's been continued to. Don't know if it'll be gone next Friday night SmackDown on this Monday's Raw, or possibly at the pay-per-view, but it's been continued to an unnamed date at this time. I'm curious to see. I hope they actually have a plan and they're not figuring it out as they go. I'm a Miz mark, so if Miz could somehow get the Money in the Bank off him, I'd be cool with that. But I also really do like Otis, so if they allow him to do something with it, I would hate to see a failed cash-in, but it is what it is. I definitely don't want to see him use it, like it's been rumored, on a secondary title like the tag titles or any title that's not the Universal title or the WWE Championship specifically. So after that, that kind of resolves where things stand with Otis and The Miz. We see Sasha Banks. She is backstage, and she challenges Bayley to a Hell in a Cell match for the SmackDown Women's Championship. So that's our third title match. That's our third Hell in a Cell that I've been alluding to all night. And then we get our main event. It's Kevin Owens versus The Fiend, following up on what happened on the previous edition. So Kevin Owens is focused. He heads down to the ring for his match right out of the gate, right when the bell rings. The Fiend is still sitting in the corner doing his creepy clown thing, and KO hits him with a cannonball right out of the gate, and The Fiend rises immediately, unscathed. He hits Kevin Owens with a hard cross body, and he keeps a fight on him. They go outside. They eventually get back inside. A headbutt to Kevin Owens from The Fiend. Fiend sends him back into the ropes. He comes back and he answers with a hard clothesline to The Fiend. And then we would see The Fiend slam Kevin Owens into the table, not once, but twice. First with a Uranagi and then with a Sister Abigail off of the corner of the table. KO was somehow still in the match. He got hit with a second Uranagi inside the ring. So he was kind of running out of time and trying to battle. A second Sister Abigail attempt was attempted, and Owens blocked it. He then hit three super kicks onto Kevin Owens, onto The Fiend, and that would send The Fiend tumbling into the corner, where he would take two additional cannonballs, and then he would eventually roll outside. Owens would catch him outside, hit him with a DDT onto the hard floor by the announce table. He would then hit him with a frog splash. So when SmackDown aired last Friday night would have been the 53rd birthday of the legend Eddie Guerrero. May he rest in peace. So that was a nice homage to him on his birthday. And Owens looked like he attempted the sky high. Michael Cole called it that. It looked like the sky high, D'Lo Brown's move. He like kind of spine busted him onto the table. But Michael Cole called it the pop-up powerbomb. The spot looked really ugly. It wasn't really anyone's fault. It just didn't work. He slammed him into the announce desk. It didn't break, so they tried it again. And it didn't really break. It just kind of like slowly collapsed. So it looked junky, but they glossed over it. Michael Cole tried really hard to sell it and make it seem like it was vicious, but it just wasn't. It was no one's fault. It was just circumstances. And so then they were back in the ring. And The Fiend rose instantly, like after being put through that table. He gets back in, he avoids the count out. Kevin Owens is super pissed. He kind of charges towards him, and he gets put in the mandible claw. But he's able to hit a stunner. But then we reveal after the stunner that The Fiend, being the monster that he is, still has the mandible claw locked in. He did not release it. He was able to then go up and hit what was like the third or the fourth Uranagi of the night for that match with the mandible claw still attached. Owens would not tap, but he was pinned both shoulders to the mat for the 1-2-3 that gave The Fiend the win. That was his first appearance on SmackDown in terms of wrestling a match. The lights would go out after the match, and then when they turn back on, Alexa Bliss would be shown there ringside with The Fiend. So very excited to see that continue. That would end the show. And then on Saturday, so yesterday on Talking Smack, it was announced that five additional picks that I'm going to run through very quickly for you here were selected, some additional draft picks that we did not see on television. And that would see Humberto Carrillo going to Raw. Buddy Murphy would go to SmackDown to effectively kind of continue that. Everybody who was part of that Mysterio Seth Rollins feud is now on SmackDown, so they can continue that. Tucker would go to Raw, so this would break up heavy machinery. SmackDown would go to Kalisto. Kalisto would go to SmackDown, rather, or stay on SmackDown. And then Drew Gulak
would be drafted to Raw. He's been over there chasing the 24/7 title a lot recently anyways, so maybe it makes sense. So we'll see. There's some championships still in play. People that could be drafted, the other members of Lucha House Party could possibly be drafted to Raw to take them away from Kalisto and break that feud up. But it was a great show, guys. I'm glad that you were here to listen. I want you to give yourselves a pat on the back or raise your arms in victory for making it through another podcast. I look forward to bringing you another edition, Raw recap with some more news and notes on Tuesday night. Enjoy some good wrestling, guys. There's a lot of stuff to look forward to next week. Until then, I'm tapping out.